Saddle up. Welcome into the Saturday show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. My name's Jay Catch. I've been doing the show kind of like solo for the last couple of weeks. Some stranger wandered into the studio this morning, and it surprised me. It's Michelle Bodkin. Michelle, what's up?
Oh, not much. I feel like this song is particularly appropriate for me.
I know. Well, welcome back.
I just have not been around.
It's okay. You've been out, obviously, doing your thing, covering the Utes, and it's been a pretty crazy season, all things considered. We're going to get into that here in just a minute. But you had a lot of day games, noon-ish type games.
Ugh.
So you had to get up to the stadium or you were on the road traveling and whatnot. So it's good to have you back, though.
I know. It's nice to be here. And, I mean, we're all in the Christmas spirit around here. Like, we have some fa-la-la-la-la, some decked halls.
We have a Christmas tree. We've got garland. We've got wreaths in the studio. I've got to say, this was all done yesterday, sometime between about noon, 12:30 yesterday, and when I got here this morning. So there you go.
There you go. Feeling festive.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. At The Zone, we don't typically have Christmas decorations in our studio, so this is kind of a new thing for us. This is kind of fun, though, at the same time. But all the same, thank you to all of you for tuning in to the Saturday show. We got plenty coming up on today's show. We'll get into some of the college football stuff, talk to Utah Jazz, college basketball, both the Utes and the Cougars, both on the women's and men's side of things, are both off to pretty good starts.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have the women's teams going head-to-head tonight. That's 7 o'clock on the start.
5.
Is it 5?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay,
yeah.
So 5 o'clock on that one, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to be joined by Ken Pomeroy, of course, of KenPom.com, like the foremost guru when it comes to college basketball analytics. The funny thing is he lives right here in Utah. He's this like world-famous dude on college hoops, but calls Salt Lake City home right now. It's really cool. So he'll join us. We'll get his thoughts.
I was going to say, I mean, it checks out, right?
Yeah.
Before we became a college football town, we were strictly a basketball town.
It was a basketball town, no doubt. Yeah, so we have plenty of that. Let's start today's show. Let's get everybody's highlight of the week. So, Michelle, will you start us off?
My highlight of this week? Probably putting up, like, Christmas decorations.
Okay.
Love that.
Yeah.
And then just the fact that it was a little bit quieter this week. Like,
yeah.
I got to sit and just like prepare a bunch of stuff because I know like next week and probably the following week not so quiet again. So to get a jump start and ahead on some of that, so I don't feel like I'm scrambling. Was kind of nice.
Well, I can say it felt almost like unnerving in a way.
It was. I was like, I promise I'm working. Like, I promise I'm doing stuff.
Because we go through like a 13-week sprint in the media world with college football, and then when all of a sudden it's like, everybody's done. It's like, like the brakes, you just like slam on the brakes. You're like, what just happened here?
Well, it's a little bit different than it has been the last 2 years for me.
Sure.
You know, Utah's not going to the Pac-12 title game. You know, there's not Rose Bowl buzz.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a little bit of a different animal. It kind of is a nice break. And I think actually everybody up at Utah also, I mean, you want that recognition, right? But I think everybody up at Utah also is kind of relieved in a way to have a year where they can kind of just kick back and have a nice holiday.
Take a breath. Yeah. I can understand that. Jason's producing for us today. Jason, you got a highlight of your week?
I do. I'm kind of weird, as you
okay.
might have guessed.
Okay.
I'm different than most, I think, sports fans out there. I like the transfer portal. I'm a transfer portal guy. I really love it.
It's Monday Christmas for you then?
Yeah, I'm loving this. I mean, it literally reminds me of free agency in baseball, although you don't even know who's going to be a free agent.
Who's actually available.
Unlike baseball, when their contract runs out, you know that they're going to be the free agent. But, you don't know in college football. I love the added dimension. I love the freedom that the college players have to go to other schools if that's what they so choose. I think some of them shouldn't choose it, but you know, whatever. That's their own deal. If they want to choose it, that's fine. And I think it adds an extra thing to the coaching staffs now. It used to be that whoever could recruit the best was, you know, was at the top, but now you have to recruit and you have to work the transfer portal as well. Yep. You got to earn that $8 million, $10 million that you make every year, Nick Saban. You got to earn it, Dabo. You got to earn it, man.
Hey, add Jonathan Smith to that
There
list.
You go. Yeah, exactly.
Michigan State's paying him a pretty penny all of a sudden.
Exactly. And I know that Dabo doesn't like to use the transfer portal, but you know, you're going to have to. That's just the
Buttercup.
That's right. That's the day and age we're playing in.
He's got to get on board with it. You know that. See, the thing about Jason, I actually do like the transfer portal.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
It's a fun. It's just there's the wheeling and dealing of it all, cuz you're right. There is the unknown of okay, who's hopping in here. And it's been it's been a week full of I intend to enter the transfer portal. I'm a grad transfer cuz grad transfers can do it at any point.
Right, right.
They can do it. So we've already seen, I know of three from BYU. I've seen, I think, at least four from Utah, Michelle, off the top of my head.
Most of them have kind of been towards the back of the roster. But yeah, there's been a good handful. I expect probably a few more to jump in.
And Monday's when the portal for undergrads opens. And that's when the floodgates really are going to go berserk.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you on that. Highlight of my week. Technology is getting better and better. Let me be very clear about this. So I got a new phone.
Okay.
Last time I had to to transfer data between my phones, this goes back, I think, 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
It took 3 hours.
Yep.
It took forever.
Yep.
Yesterday, got this, set it down to my current phone, 20 minutes.
What?
Done. Wow.
And the best part about it is, I had to sign into two things. Everything else was signed into. I didn't have to re-sign into every app known to man, it felt like I had to do last time. All my contacts transferred over cleanly because I was checking all those because in media we have a bunch of phone numbers you cannot lose.
Yeah.
but I don't know who has made this process quicker, but round of applause for you.
I mean, I had to do that last year and it took forever, but it's because I am a picture hoarder.
Okay,
so
the one thing I think that helps me, I think I have an app, the Google Photos app, where it actually automatically uploads into the cloud. They don't stay on my phone, which I think helped. But still, 20 minutes to have it go from one phone to another.
Is way better.
It was great.
Way better.
And like I said, I didn't have to sign into multiple Twitter accounts, Instagram, all that stuff transferred directly over. I'm like, this is fantastic. So props to you, Apple, whoever nerd in the Apple's pantheon of people that figured that out. It made it very, very simple. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no. a clean transfer is always very nice.
First world problems. Let's just put it that way.
Yes.
All right. So let's dive right in. I want to start off, Michelle. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in college football. It's championship weekend. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned the Pac-12 title game. It felt a bit melancholy last night because I was over at the Delta Center watching BYU and Fresno State play, but I had my iPad out and I was watching the Pac-12 title game, watching Washington hold on in some ways for that win over Oregon. But as soon as it was over, it was like, hold on, that's the last Pac-12 game ever.
Yeah.
It felt weird. What were your thoughts watching it?
It was like, can we just keep playing this game? Let's just keep playing Let's just hang on to this for a little bit longer. It was a very sad realization. I actually had an interaction with a USC fan after the game. He came on and said he's maybe one of the few psychos that actually liked playing Utah.
Okay.
Enjoyed that it was a good game almost always. His whole thing was it's crazy that this is the last game, but it also probably won't really, really register for me until I start watching everybody playing in different places and knowing that there's not a Utah versus USC game coming up or, you know, whoever else in the Pac-12.
What you've gotten adjusted to expecting. And that's the thing about this is I was watching that game and I kept having to remind myself, this is the last Pac-12 game because next year when the season opens, four of the teams are in the Big 12. Four of them are in the Big 10.
Five
of them.
Four.
Four, you're right. And then two of them are
ACC and two of them are sort of merged.
They agreed to a scheduling
deal
with the Mountain West yesterday, which we can actually talk about. It's an interesting deal because it's only for one season.
Yeah.
It's for 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens beyond that.
Yeah.
But it it felt like a really, really weird thing just to be sitting there. I'm like, okay. And by the way, congratulations to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I did the – so when Oregon came to Utah, I did the pre- and post-game show that day. And mm-hmm. Christian Cox and I think we were in agreement after that game. We're like, okay, if Oregon's going to play like this, they're going to get revenge and they're going to go get Washington. Mm-hmm. And Christian went on the record. He said, I'll say it right now. Oregon is going to win the rematch down in Las Vegas. He thought they would square off in the Pac-12 title game. And I was hard pressed to disagree with him. But he said, they're going to win this. So big ups to Washington.
It's interesting. Jake and Ben, before the game was mm-hmm. played, you know, asked me my thoughts on the game. And obviously, I think up to that point, Oregon had been playing better ball overall.
Yeah.
And even considering the fact that they lost to Washington a few weeks back up in Seattle, mm-hmm. It just really kind of felt like Oregon was the better, more well-balanced team. But with that being said, there's something about Washington that kind of reminded me of the 2008 Utah Utes. There were some close games, some close calls, some teams that team you just would not think had any business going toe-to-toe with. They should have blown them out. New Mexico particularly comes to mind to me in that instance. But for whatever reason, even if it was a close, ugly game, that team just knew how to win. And I think Washington this year is built very, very similarly. It may not be the prettiest, and they may show some weaknesses, but for whatever reason, they're able to overcome that. And I think we saw that again last night. There's just an it factor with them that, like, I think it's really, really hard to measure.
Well, and the one thing I noticed last night is they had all their wide receivers finally fully healthy. Like, Roman Dunze has been the lead guy, but mm-hmm. having all of their weapons, all of a sudden it's like, okay, Washington's dangerous.
Watch us roll. Yeah. Watch us roll.
So they're a very good team. We'll see ultimately how the college football playoff rankings, how they decide to rank them. That'll come out tomorrow, and we'll see where things fall. But Washington's going to be in the field. So mm-hmm. the Pac-12 will have representation at minimum there. Looking forward to that. But the other thing about it was it felt weird because you're right. You talked about it at the start of the show. The last 2 years, Utah had been going to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So it felt like we had an extension of the season locally by at least mm-hmm. a week. And this week it just hit the skids.
Yeah. It's turn off the lights. Nobody's home.
So I want to ask you now, Jason already alluded to the transfer portal. We'll see what happens to all these local programs. Mm-hmm. But looking back at Utah's regular season, from your mm-hmm. perspective, after now it's all done, they've dealt with all the injuries, played I don't know how many quarterbacks. Is it five on the season? Four?
Man. Too many.
Luke Batari ends up getting a start on senior day.
Batari Ferrari.
Has, by the way, maybe the best gif I've seen in recent memory. The flip of the hair and then the wink as he's putting the headset on.
Well, the funny thing is Cam has a very similar one,
yes,
too.
Yes, he does.
I was like, it must be a Utah quarterback thing.
But like, Cam's is kind of like in like real time. Batari's like, purposely like, slowed down.
Slow mode. Yeah. Yeah, baby.
Just made me chuckle. I'm like, that is an awesome gif. But nonetheless, now like kind of in retrospect now, because we now wait to see where Utah lands when they go to the bowl games. I'm sincerely hoping they go to Las Vegas.
Me too.
The projections, a lot of the projections have them going there, playing a team from the Big Ten. I saw Maryland this morning as a potential.
Yeah, Maryland was the most recent one that seems to pop up. I know Northwestern was a popular choice for a minute. We'll see what happens.
Northwestern? No, please no.
I mean, the rematch, if there could be a revenge bowl for the Holiday Bowl, but like, yeah, like.
But I want to see Talia Tagovailoa and Mike Locksley from Maryland more than I want to see whatever Northwestern's got going on.
I think that's probably most people.
So we're going to see on that point. But looking back, what do you make of the season, just in retrospect, from the regular season perspective?
I mean, this was kind of a weird season, right? Like, in a way, it was a letdown, but in a way, it's hard if you're a fan to not be very proud of this team.
Sure.
Because what they went through to get a winning record and not just barely skating into a winning record, I mean, they mm-hmm. solidly have a winning record, was kind of ridiculous. It just, the amount of injuries, the amount of guys that weren't able to come back, and then the little injuries week to week where guys would miss time, and then you add in the illness that's ailed them for like 2 weeks.
Darn flu.
It's been a year,
yeah,
for them. But I think they handled it with grace, and I think they handled it really about as well as you could hope for someone to handle something like that. There are a lot of teams that I you get down to your Luke Batari, you're not winning anything. but they all just kind of shut up, put their heads down, and got to work and didn't make excuses. And yeah, like there were a couple of games that got away from them and were out of hand. But again, when you're playing a fourth or fifth string quarterback and, you know, fourth and fifth string players in other places, mm-hmm, because that's literally what you're down to, you have no business being in some of those games. And yet, for the most part, they were at least competitive outside of Oregon and Arizona.
Let me just interject. It screamed to me, this is the mark of what this program is built.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it is, yeah, you had to play Luke Batari.
Yeah.
You were playing second and third string defensive players across the board, it felt like, a point, especially in the front seven at points.
Yeah.
Like, and you mentioned the flu knocking guys out. Had Devon Vele on for his final visit earlier this past week, and he's like, I wanted so badly to be out there for senior day.
Oh,
I said,
no doubt.
I was so ill, I just couldn't. I could not do it. I'm like, and that's brutal.
Yeah.
And to add that on top of, like you said, all the other dings and dents and the injuries,
yeah,
that came along, it screams to me that's what Utah's built here. They built, mm-hmm, a baseline of the overall depth and talent in the program. It's going to hold them in against most opponents.
Yeah.
Which, okay, from the BYU side of things, is BYU finished with a 5-game losing streak.
Yeah.
In most circumstances, they had an 18-point lead against Oklahoma State at halftime. You had no business losing that lead.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been able to sit on that. Unfortunately, you were unable to. Oklahoma the week prior, had you not had some of the turnovers that they had, especially a 100-yard pick six, you likely win one of those two games and you scoot into the postseason. You kind of like by the skin of your teeth.
Yeah.
You get to 6-6. You're like, whew, we made it.
Yeah.
In some ways, I think 5-7 for the BYU side of things has exposed that, okay, BYU needs to make some changes, mm-hmm, obviously to upgrade the talent base, and they made coaching changes as well that were much needed. There was some fear in my mind, had BYU gotten to 6-6, they could have crowed and been like, you know what? We're Power 5. We played the toughest schedule in BYU history, and we still made the postseason.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah.
In some ways, I'm actually, in a way, thankful that the 5-7 season came about, because there were some coaches, and they let one in particular, Daryl Funk, he needed to go. The writing was on the wall. The offensive line was struggling. They had far more talent than what they were putting on the field right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 5-7 has kind of put BYU on notice, saying, okay, you got to fix this. Getting back to the point on Utah is, Utah in previous years, probably going back 5 or 6 years, probably would have had a season similar to BYU.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
But it's a credit to what Kyle Whittingham, it's been a perpetual progress in the program each year to bring in guys. When you do have to drop to the Luke Bataris and whatnot, they're still able to keep a baseline of play that is going to keep you competitive.
Yeah. And you know what? Again, as disappointing as I think that was for fans, because I really truly believe if Utah had all their pieces, they probably would have been back in Vegas.
They could have been, yeah.
I think they very well could have been back. But, you know, that's not what happened. That's not how things played out. But, you know, in a way, I think it was good for them to kind of see what they had,
mm-hmm,
as far as their depth goes. And the crazy thing is, like, I mean, a lot of people would be super thrilled and happy with the result.
Sure.
But you know that coaching staff is going through and evaluating and doing, okay, well, where are we still deficient? And they're going to try and bolster it up even more. I think it's interesting that they kind of got to see how far they can kind of push this,
mm-hmm,
with a bunch of their backups and whatnot. But it also was a bit of a chance for them to evaluate and see kind of where they're at and where they maybe still need to bolster some places and kind of keep improving, bringing in talent and making sure that they're prepared for the absolute worst case scenario.
Well, and that's a very, I think, underrated point in all this, is you're right. They got a real good look at, okay, how deep are we truly? Because you just, the amount of injuries that Utah absorbed this year were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like every week it was like, okay, this person's done for the year.
Yeah.
And you're like, How many more hits can this program take? The nice part is Kyle Whittingham has built something that is, it's got staying power. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're switching conferences next year. I'm just going to say it right now. I'd be surprised if Utah's not the preseason pick to win the Big 12 next season, just with Cam Rising coming back. We haven't heard on Brant Keithy still, right?
Yeah, there's a handful of guys that we still have not heard on.
Sato Olaumea already announced that he is going to the senior. Oh, he accepted the invite to the senior.
He accepted, and that was actually a bit of a surprise to me. I had an NFL buddy.
The chatter was saying that he was going to come back.
Yeah,
right?
I had an NFL buddy say that he thought that he was going to come back.
Now
so
he could still back out on that.
He could back out on that. It's kind of rare. And I have been told that some of these guys that could come back, but have a draftable grade, it sounds like they're actually going to be encouraged to go ahead and leave, because it feels like they're not going to really improve their stock anymore.
Got it.
So don't risk not making the money that you're capable of making by coming back.
You got to strike while the iron's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a conversation with a BYU player actually earlier this week that's kind of the conversation we had is like, when your draft grade hits a point, you just got to say, you know what? It's been fun. Got to jump.
Yeah. And I think Utah's in a place where they feel very confident that they can address whoever leaves either via recruiting high school talent in or via the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And I think they feel good about the NIL that they can, provide an offer. Obviously, they have a great track record putting people into the NFL. Mm-hmm. And they have a great track record of winning at a high level.
Sure.
So, I think they have things that they feel very confident that they can sell in order to kind of replace guys that they do encourage now to head off to the NFL. And it's not that big of a deal. It's very, very interesting to think about it from that perspective, because there was a time when it's like, no, please come back. Please come back. Like, don't leave us.
Sure, because you needed those guys. You needed your frontline guys to hold up. But you're right. I can think of like Cole Bishop's in that mix. Mm-hmm. Lavonte DeMooney already announced he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
He was
a
guy I was kind of going back and forth on if he might ultimately decide to bowl. But like there are multiple guys you can look on that roster and say, okay, yeah, you may just at this point go chase your fortunes in the NFL. Thank you for everything you've done. But at the same time, the coaching staff's thinking, okay, you know what? We literally got to look at all this. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
We're obviously going to have to go out and recruit at a high level. You just have
That's just what it is.
Part of the calculus. But I you're right. It's no longer like, you sure you want to leave?
Yeah. Please come back. Pretty please come back. Please, 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 please.
Yeah.
We might be in trouble if you don't come back.
It's going to be an interesting thing to see who ultimately does decide to bolt. We already talked about the transfer portal opens officially on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Where these programs decide to kind of add or they subtract certain people.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending process. And the next, we're December 2nd today. The early signing window opens up in just over 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
This 14 to 16 days, it's maybe some of the most important days in every program annually, because you see who you're losing, at least in theory, from the portal, guys entering the portal. You're adding guys as fast as you possibly can because the portal just is a whirlwind. And then, by the way, the early signing window happens, and your high school talent you've been recruiting all year long, that's who you sign for the future. And programs that fire coaches, you're seeing them do it quickly and hire new coaches very quickly because they realize, you know what? We have to get in on this window. If we don't, you essentially lose an entire year.
Yeah.
I know it's crazy to think that 2 weeks can affect an entire season, but it absolutely does.
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah. So this is a wild time of year. It never used to be that way, but it is now. I think, at least from Utah's perspective, it's sounding very positive, both transfer portal wise and recruiting wise. Now, does that mean a surprise could happen? Of course. It is the wild, wild west out there, and you just never know until you know. But it seems like the right people are bought in. They're interested in either coming back or joining in.
Okay.
And that I would even include the coaches in that. We're going to see names pop up for various job openings, but it sounds like everybody's just very invested. I think I think Kyle Whittingham and the Utah program kind of smells blood in the water. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a very, very great opportunity in the Big 12 to possibly win a championship again. It feels a little wide open. Again, it's hard to say for sure, though, because we've seen things change in an instant with the transfer portal and some of that kind of stuff. So some of these teams that we're looking at going, I don't know,
sure,
could end up being a juggernaut. You just don't know. But as things stand, you know, Utah has to be looking there. Kyle Whittingham has to be looking there and going, we can take this over. There's an opening for a dominant brand. There just really isn't one. And there's a couple of teams, you know, that could kind of jockey for that space. And mm-hmm. I think Utah is absolutely one of them. And then, of course, you have the expanded college football playoff.
Correct.
You know, the door is much wider open for you to go in there and showcase what you can do. And I think this program is taking that very, very seriously. I think, you know, people that are available to come and go also see that potential and opportunity. And so it's a very interesting place for some, you know, bigger names to maybe think about transferring to.
Well, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting offseason, obviously, with the official transition taking place. You're right. The Big 12, it is up for the taking in many respects.
It is.
And the one thing Utah needs to do, and that's, it feels like next year in particular, is you have Cam Rising coming back. It's mm-hmm. an upperclassman-laden team, even with guys potentially exiting the program yep. this year. You got to be able to kind of get in and get going right away, because if you don't, if you fail to capitalize on that, and I know we're over time, I'm going to break here in just a moment, but if you don't capitalize on that next year, mm-hmm. it's almost like a waste, because you can find yourself behind the eight ball suddenly and let some, as you mentioned, some of these other brands be like, yeah, hey, we're gonna take the lead in terms of being the lead dog here, and that'll be the interesting part. But crazy seasons all the same. Coming up next, though, we're gonna dig a little bit into the Utah Jazz. You want to talk about a crazy season? We'll talk about that next. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Ken Pomeroy joins us, and at the end of this hour, we'll also get to a technical foul. So more to come. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. We got the Big 12 title game on the TV here in the studio. And Texas is wasting no time out there, Michelle. Jason, you said it was how long? 2 minutes? 2 minutes and 8 seconds?
2 minutes, 8 seconds for them to score their first touchdown.
They're yep. back on offense here. They're running a flea flicker.
Then
wide open.
Yeah.
Touchdown. All right.
So easy. So easy.
Well, there you go. So Texas off and rolling. Oklahoma State, obviously, playing in the Big 12 title game. They had a tale of a game last week against BYU. Kind of sleepwalking through the first half, allowed BYU to build a 24-8 lead, and then come storming back to beat BYU in overtime. Crazy way for BYU season to end, by the way.
But nonetheless,
crazy scenes, and it's championship weekend. The other thing about this, we need to talk about this later on, Michelle. Have you seen the whining that's already happening from the SEC? Greg Sankey, their commissioner, is already like politicking. You wouldn't dare leave us out of the playoff. It's essentially as if Alabama were to beat Georgia today in the SEC championship game. It's like,
you know what? It's your turn.
They've not.
There are other conferences that have more than paid that price that you could have two people in.
We're like, the SEC.
Sure, Greg Sankey, sure.
We'll talk about it. Well, I got to pull up the actual quote. It's absolutely hilarious to me. But nonetheless, I want to talk a little bit about the Utah Jazz here for a little bit. So Utah Jazz are in action tonight. Did you watch much of the NBA in-season tournament, or have you seen much of it, Michelle?
I didn't catch any of it. I heard that it was very rough.
The group play was an interesting experience. Obviously, the quarterfinals, semis, and final will be playing out over this next week or so. The semifinals and final are in Vegas, is where they're going to be playing those. Mm-hmm. I will say, just from my perspective, it seems to have garnered some extra interest in the NBA during a time of the year when a lot of people are like, hold on, the NBA is playing?
We're doing that already?
Because football dominates during this period. And it has generated that interest. But the tough part is for you, if for fans here in Utah, is the Jazz have been kind of just scuffling along here. They're 6-13. They have had some moments where they've been like, okay, they're an all right team. They're going to host the Portland Trailblazers tonight at the Delta Center. Or is it, have you heard the debate? Is it the Delta Center or Delta Center, apparently? Like they've.
Does it matter?
Apparently, because in the branding, there's some thought that they purposely are going with just Delta Center.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably still going to be the Delta Center for me, but whatever floats your boat.
Don't say that around PK. He'll correct you very quickly. It's been a running joke all week long.
Oh, my gosh.
But nonetheless, they're in action tonight. But they come off two very tough losses on the road, which they looked rough. The Grizzlies are not good, by the way. The Grizzlies suck, and they got absolutely boat raced in Memphis. The following night, they went against the Minnesota Timberwolves, obviously that had Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert in the lineup, and they pounded the Jazz. And that came off of the back after they had beaten the New Orleans Pelicans two times in a row here in Salt Lake City. So I'm kind of confused as to, will the real Jazz...
Please stand up.
Yeah. Thank you for finishing my statement, because there feels like so much... unknown about this team. Mm-hmm. Will Hardy, I think it was after the last time they played the Trailblazers, if I'm not mistaken. They got blown out by the Trailblazers in Portland. And Will Hardy made the comment, if you're going to wear a Jazz jersey, you got to give a bleep about the Jazz. Like, you've got to, like, and he shuffled the lineup. He has started a bunch of guys that were expected to be bench role players. And they've responded with better play, but it just feels like I'm not sure what the identity of this Jazz team is and what it is going to be all season long. And maybe that's the thing about this Jazz team. Maybe it's going to be, it's unidentifiable all season long.
I think it's so interesting that kind of last year it was the same thing, but it was a lot more positive, right? It was like, oh, okay, you guys are kind of good. And this year they're struggling. Mm-hmm. It feels a bit like a sophomore slump to me. Which we all kind of wondered if that wouldn't maybe be the case. Mm-hmm. I think it is interesting though. You know, do they start this season a little rougher and finish it stronger and kind of do the reverse of what happened last year?
There are some changes on that roster if that's going to happen.
It's going to be interesting to follow this, especially now that I've like gone rid of football
for a little bit.
I can't make sixes of this team because I just haven't really been able to watch. All I know is what I've seen.
Sure.
And I know that my poor Jazz fan friends talking about, should I watch this game or should I watch a movie?
Well, and there's been
the movie was a good choice.
There have been some of those nights, yes. It's been like, okay, yeah, I'm going to turn this off. That's the tough part about it is it has been non-competitive at times. And that's, mm-hmm. as a fan, you want your team at kind of the baseline is to be in the game and look like they're half interested, it feels like.
Like they belong on the court.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's been at times. It's been lacking for this Jazz team. So I'm not sure what to expect tonight as they take on Portland. They're back home. They're in Delta Center, and it should give them a better opportunity to play in front of their home fans. But they've not had necessarily a home court advantage this season. They're 6-13.
Yeah.
Portland's 6-12. They're like right near the bottom of the standings together. And the other thing about this, and I keep thinking about this, I want your thought on this, Michelle, is that you talk about last year where it was a similar conversation, but you said it was kind of more focused on the positive side of it. The Jazz jettisoned a bunch of the dudes that were carrying them through that early part of the season. Mike Conley, most particularly. He really, really. Mike Conley should be appreciated simply for the fact that he's a steady hand at the controls of an NBA team. He's very, very good about keeping guys engaged, obviously controlling things. It feels like, in some ways, we have experienced the reverse of what I expected from this Utah Jazz team when they blew it up and traded Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell away.
Right.
Bojan Bogdanovic as well. They kind of blew up the whole core and moved all those guys out. Is I expected what's happening right now,
mm-hmm.
last year, mm-hmm. versus what we saw last year and then rolling into this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that was exactly my point, and you actually said it better than I did. Yeah. No, It's very interesting. It's interesting to see. And then, you know, I'm looking at some of the things that Ben's written over the last week. Yeah. I mean, you know, you have Lauri Markkanen that's going to miss games. And
done with a hamstring injury. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, you have probably your best player not available to you and your team's struggling already even with him in the game.
Well, and the crazy thing about it is they beat New Orleans without him. They beat New Orleans in back-to-back games. And by the way, New Orleans, the one game they didn't have Zion and they didn't have CJ McCollum in those games, mm-hmm. but they still had a lot of firepower. Brandon Ingram's out there. This is a New Orleans team that has every aspiration of being a top half of the NBA in the Western Conference, like in the playoff standings. And you beat them back-to-back, but then you go up against the Memphis Grizzlies, who are just out of sorts beyond belief. Marcus Smart is out. John Morant's still suspended. Steven Adams is done for the year. They are all out of sorts, and you allow them just to run you over.
You know, maybe some overconfidence in, well, it could be worse. We could be them, and them ended up kicking their butts,
yeah.
You know?
Well, see, yeah, I think the point we're both making here is that, yes, you expected what happened last year, mm-hmm. kind of maybe this year, the progression where it kind of went in reverse.
Yeah.
The interesting part will be, will Danny Ainge wheel and deal this year? Or is he willing to, you know, absorb a major, major hit this year, really kind of fly up the board towards the top of it, mm-hmm. even though you do have Detroit, who did not win in the month of November, Michelle. They lost 16 games, the Detroit Pistons did. You have the San Antonio Spurs with the number one pick, Victor Wembanyama, who have lost, I think it's 12 or 13 straight of their own. Like, there's a bunch of teams that are already racing towards the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Jason, you just probably made it. The Wizards, yeah. They've got Jordan Poole trying just, what is he doing out there? Like, he's playing like and one street ball, it feels like, in an NBA game, and thinking he's going to get away with it because he's got this big old contract. It's like, no, they'll bench you eventually.
Yeah.
Kyle Kuzma's the only redeeming factor about the Washington Wizards, by the way, which sucks for Kuz because he's stuck in yet another crappy situation. It feels like I'm interested to see how the Jazz philosophy changes. And obviously, we're still a month or two away from really trade season mm-hmm. heating up. This is my gut feeling, is I don't think Danny Ainge is going to wheel and deal this year. I think he's going to take the hit, try and really see what they've got roster-wise, and that's going to include at some point, I'm imagining, because Keontae George has been awesome.
Yeah.
He's been everything the Jazz want him to be. Bryce Sensabaugh and Taylor Hendricks, I've just combined the two names, Bryce Hendricks. But Taylor Hendricks, obviously, a lot of people are excited to see what he's doing. He's doing some very, very good things with the Stars right now in the G League. Mm-hmm. Bryce Sensabaugh, we'll see what happens. I think at some point this season, you're going to bring them up full-time up to the Jazz roster. And I think, this is me speaking, I think they're going to go full-on into that youth movement and see, okay, what do these guys have? And then, similar to our conversation actually last segment, find out where you're deficient and then go and try and address that.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, looking back on last year, was that a mistake that, you know, this team didn't do? Because they kind of just kept rolling and were good.
I think that they thought they were going to be a lot worse than they were.
Yeah.
They thought they had stripped it down enough that they're okay, we're going to take the hit here. But by the way, Lauri Markkanen puts together an all-star campaign season.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Mike Conley has said it was a kind of steady hand. They didn't expect that, and it played out that way. And in some ways, I think the fan discontent this year is a result of the fact that they were as competitive as they were last year.
Yep. So yeah, to your point, you know, maybe the thought process is, okay, like, we were supposed to be doing this last year, and we didn't do this, so let's just ride this train. And really make some moves for the third year of this regime. You know, it's hard to say, you know, what's in people's minds, but to me that maybe makes a little bit of sense, just from the standpoint of, yeah, I think last year what's happening now was the expectation, and it just didn't happen.
Well, and the tough part is that you're ripping the Band-Aid off this year potentially, and it's just it hurts all the more.
It does.
Because, well, the other thing about
they were decent last year.
They were, and it's the 50th anniversary of the Jazz and everything, and
they're
celebrating
true.
All that stuff, and that's fun. I was over at a press conference earlier this week where they announced they're going to have they're having a documentary. It's going to be like a 35-minute documentary all told, and Heart and Hustle, which is a filmmaking crew that does a lot of big projects, they're doing it, and the trailer for it's out there. You can find it on social media. There's gonna be like six other teaser videos leading up to when they actually launch it. It's a big celebration of all of that. Mm-hmm. The sad part is it might be one of the worst teams in the 50 years that happens to be actually on the court as that celebration's going on, and that I know it's hard for Jazz fans to go with that because this has been a franchise that, at minimum, they were a playoff caliber squad annually for 35 years.
Ever.
So it's going to be an interesting deal to see where this kind of all shakes out because it's a long season. There's no doubt about it. It's one of the longest pro seasons in all of the professional sports. And the tough part is when it's like an up, down, and here, there, and everywhere, you're like, I don't even know what to expect.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, if you, and especially the diehards that are fully invested and it's a strange part of their identity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you might be in for a rough ride this year. Sorry.
Yeah, we shall see. All right. Coming up on the other side, we will get to technical fouls. We're going to talk about some of the less savory and just downright stupid things in sports. We'll get to that next. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You won't feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal foul, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you're doing well on the Saturday morning. As you heard, it is time now for technical fouls. This is a segment where we kind of just get it out there and talk about all of the things that are just going wrong in the world of sports. So, Michelle, what do you got for us this week?
You know, I'm going to go with technical foul on the Pac-12 championship game. Just should not have ever been the last one.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
No, there's just no reason this conference should not still exist, and yet here we are. So, sad, unfortunate. We beat with a stick the reasons why this came to be, and there are a lot of people that deserve a lot of blame.
By the way, George Kliavkov.
Yeah.
Could that dude have, like, hidden any harder?
Slinked in. I loved someone's.
Here's a trophy. I'm running away.
Yeah. I love somebody's comment. I saw a tweet or a post, I guess, that I hope George Kliavkov's giving his paycheck to Holly Rowe for doing his job for him.
Ooh, fire. Burn. Well done. That's awesome. Really, really crazy scenes, right? It should never have gotten to this point, it feels like, but it is nuts. By the way, George Kliavkov, just announced you're resigning already. Like, get out. Just get out. You're really going to go down with that ship? Like, you're going to let... I would have, like, when all seems up, I'm like, you know what? Who wants to be the interim commissioner? Because I'm out.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, I don't think Washington State and Oregon State are even consulting with him.
No, so it's not.
What is your purpose even being here?
Part of their lawsuit essentially told the Pac-12 offices, you have no say.
Yeah.
Like they have essentially tried to ban everybody but themselves from controlling anything with that conference. And I understand why.
Oh, I completely understand why too. And I don't blame them in the slightest. And in a way, you know, I hope they win that battle. Because they're the ones that are paying the ultimate price for a lot of other people's mistakes. So,
yep. Jason, you got anything this week?
I do. I was going to talk about the SEC, but I won't do that because I know that that's you. You're going to hit that here in just a minute. So I'm actually going to call out Hollywood this week. Yeah, I know. So there's a new movie out. You may have heard about it. It's called Next Goal Wins or whatever. Okay. The movie's made $5 million in 2 weeks. That's it. $5 million. Hollywood, please stop making formulaic feel-good sports movies. We've had enough. I mean, love me some Mighty Ducks from back in the day, Cool Runnings, whatever. Uh-huh. But I mean, the whole down on his luck coach takes this ragtag bunch and tries to get success out of them, and they either win or they lose, but there's a feel-good story at the end, yada-da-yada-da-yada-da. Stop already, okay? We're tired of it. It's done, and I think the money is speaking that you know, we're just tired of it. It's time. My favorite sports movie of all time, Bull Durham, not formulaic. Yeah. Not formulaic at all. Love that movie. Great movie. stop with the formula sports feel-good movies. It just doesn't work anymore.
And that movie, it's gotten like not as much attention, I think, as they expected it to. You're
right.
Right. And that,
right.
You're right. Maybe it is just it's a kind of a victim of the formula there.
Yep. Yep. So.
All right. I got one here real quick. Technical foul on the NFL here. I don't know if you guys saw this. Photographer Kevin Fitzgibbons, he's been contracted by the NFL to shoot Dolphins home games. He was suspended for the remainder of the season and, quote, possibly for good by the league for his role in Tyreek Hill's touchdown celebration against the Carolina Panthers during a win during week 6. After scoring, Hill took Fitzgibbons' cell phone and filmed himself doing a backflip, after which the photographer was seen excitedly jumping up and down before he left the field to send the clip to the NFL. They say the incident was unplanned, but Fitzgibbons said the NFL did not appreciate the way he reacted after the celebration. The NFL then let me know that I would be suspended for the remainder of the season and possibly for good. They said regardless of if I knew the celebration was coming or not, I still had to be disciplined and I shouldn't have been jumping on the sidelines after the play. Tyreek Hill and Fitzgibbons have been working together for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Like Fitzgibbons is like a self-made video guy who's gone viral. He's got, let's see, 4.5 million views on TikTok, 100,000 likes on Instagram on that video alone. Like, it's gone crazy. But Tyreek Hill stepped up and said, you know what? I'm going to cover all of his lost wages. So Tyreek is stepping up and making sure this guy's taken care of. He says,
good on him.
He said this, me and Kay Fitz, we've got a long history together. The news is something that I already knew. I told him, don't let this get you down. Just hold your head up. You're still young. Continue to do what you love. Me and him are going to continue to work together. I told him I'm going to cover his salary, whether the NFL was going to pay him or whatever. I told him I was going to make sure that I do what's right and take care of you, make sure you're not out of a job. That's my guy. Unquote. So,
you know, NFL, maybe you should listen to Tyreek Hill.
And this kid, by the way, is still a student at the University of Miami. Like, he's 20 years old. Like,
don't they have other more important things they could be policing? Like, you know, domestic violence and running rampant in the NFL.
No, what are you talking about?
Nothing like that.
Why would you ever touch
now.
That?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
You know, that is something that really bugs me about this industry is that you expect people to not
have emotions.
React.
Yeah.
It drives me, or to even really kind of openly talk about like their favorite team. Mm-hmm. Well, we're all here because like we fell in love with someone, like a particular team. And some people, it's multiple teams. Some people have like their team. Mm-hmm. I like judge them based off of, can they talk unbiased about other teams despite having an open love for what kind of brought them in the first place? Yeah. You know, like if it really is all about just talking trash on everyone else and I only like, then yeah, sure. Like, you don't belong here. But, like, it just drives me nuts. Like, let us be human.
Yeah, it's just, it's a really tough look because I'm just like, this kid is trying to help build your brand. He's working for you. And yes, you have Von Miller over here punching his longtime girlfriend who's pregnant.
Crazy,
like, or
too.
Just,
I never expected that out of him.
Here's the thing, but none of us really expected, but you're right. This is what you're going to get all up in arms
about.
Yeah,
bent out of shape, over.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
crazy.
So Fitzgibbons, I hope he gets another opportunity. I honestly, in some ways, this happening to him might be the best thing that ever happened to him because it's going to erase his profile in terms of his video creation, all that type of stuff. He's going to have a lot more people saying, hey, you want to come work with me on stuff like this? So I wish him nothing but the best. And yeah, NFL, come on.
Well, you know what they say. All publicity is good unless they misspell your name. So.
That's a good point. All right. So we'll come back on the other side. We're going to talk some college hoops. Ken Pomeroy from KenPom.com. His metrics had BYU as like a really, really good team in the preseason. Now they're like elite, according to his ratings.
Woo!
Is it all a mirage? We'll get that next from Ken Pom right here on the Saturday Show.
Take the Zone with you wherever you go. Download the KSL Sports.